Hi, this is Jerry Reese. You are listening to the Disney Nerds Podcast. Have fun.
Welcome to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast. A place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
The Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the Magic Worlds of Disney.
Hello and welcome to show number 101 of the Disney Nerds Podcast. This is Jennifer, and I have with me tonight just Jimmy. How are you, Jimmy?
I am fantastic.
Good. And I guess I said just Jimmy, like you weren't awesome.
Like on the insignificant.
Yeah. But I mean that Sam, of course, is in Disney World tomorrow because he must live there.
Yeah.
And Ed couldn't be with us tonight. So it's just me and you. And you are super close to your trip down. You're going a little bit ahead of us for the meet coming up in October, but you're going down really soon, right?
I've been single digit, so 9 days to go.
That's awesome. I feel like I'm going in October, so I feel like that's so far away. But here we are recording this on the 16th, and it'll be out a couple days later, and it'll practically be October.
Yeah, I can say I'm going this one. Actually, I can say I'm going
next week, right? Oh, man.
Yes, I actually leave Friday of next week.
That's awesome. Well,
very, very excited.
Yeah, so it's not just you and me or just the four of us. We are doing our second annual meet, our first half sample-a-thon, second scavenger hunt. Tell us a little bit more about what all is going on since there's so many different things that people can join us for.
So, and both of these are listed on our Facebook page in the event section. So if you go obviously I want everybody to go join Disney Nerds, the group. But it's actually on our actual Facebook page, the Disney Nerds Podcast Facebook page. If you go to events, all the details are there. But just a quick recap, October 2nd, we are having a meetup in Epcot, a food and wine festival, half sample-a-thon. And that's a joint meetup with Scott Parker and his group taking the Florida Plunge. And then Rod Wheaton from the WDW Mousinger podcast. And what we're going to do is basically we're going to meet up at the craft beer booth at 5 o'clock local time there. And we're going to start there and then work our way halfway around the World Showcase, going through Mexico into ending pretty much at American Adventure to see the last showing that night of Starship.
Very cool. And this was so much fun last year. We had a similar meet, but it was a little bit, we had some competitive teams doing a scavenger hunt. This is just going to be hanging out, eating around the world and doing fun things together.
Yeah, but, just socializing.
Yeah, just hanging out and then catching the show. And then many people will probably keep going or stick around for Illuminations too. So there's no like hard end as far as I know.
But, no, not really.
And then there is a scavenger hunt the next day.
Yep, that'll be on October 3rd, that's the Saturday, at 10 o'clock. And we will meet up by the benches close to the Brown Derby, kind of where that entrance to where the big arch is for the Hollywood Studios arch. I think that's correct, right?
Yeah. So basically you're saying we can get a Butterfinger cupcake for breakfast and then meet outside the Brown Derby.
Absolutely. Or depending on how much fun you have Friday night, you can get a Yingling or maybe even a Bloody Mary from the Brown Derby.
I'm not sure what they serve that early in the morning, but
so that's going to be a lot of fun too. And we're not actually going to participate in the scavenger hunt because we're grading it. So we've got to get a sneak peek of it. And Ed did a fantastic job putting this together, and it's going to be really, really cool. So that's going to be a lot of fun as well.
Yeah. And if you were with us last year, like it's very similar, but Ed has even gone a little bit farther this year. There's like some word puzzles that require skill that's not just related to your knowledge of the studio. So it almost doesn't matter if you have a team that has people of all different nerdiness levels, people who know all the details of the studios and then people who don't. I think it doesn't matter. You're going to work well together. There's a lot of different opportunities for points and just to have a lot of fun.
And, you know, I'm really looking forward to Friday night. You know, I don't know how many people, you know, listening to this, listen to our show on a regular basis, but it's, you know, it's about going out there and hanging out with friends of the show. But also, I mean, for those of you who don't know, all of us, me, Jennifer, Sam, and Ed, I mean, we're spaced out all over the country. So just getting together with you guys and being able to spend some time with you guys face to face, it's not very, very often we are all together in person.
Yeah, and we talked at the end of last week's show, our 100th, just about how special that Disney community is. The four of us have gotten to know one another, and we've gotten to know so many people in the Disney Nerds group and other podcasts that we've kind of worked with. And it's always such a fun time to catch back up with people. So I'm looking forward to it. And apparently it's coming up really soon, even though I'm barely prepared. It's going to be super fun. So beyond that, what we did this week was maybe not it was different for sure. It wasn't relaxing and fun. I watched 4 hours of Walt Disney biography. Did you see that this week? It was on PBS. The show or the series is An American Experience, and they covered Walt Disney.
So I watched 2 hours of it. So I didn't catch the second half, which just came on yesterday. I have it recorded, but I've yet to watch it. And I think they released it on DVD on Amazon at the same time it broadcasted.
Yeah, like the first night. I thought that, so I stayed up. I'm on East Coast and I'm an early riser. So to start a show at 9 and end it at 11 was pretty difficult. But I heard an interview with the director and they were like, we're going to try to stream it, you know, on the 16th, which I believe may or may not have happened. I'm not sure. We're going to stream it then, but otherwise that's the only time it's going to show. And I thought that was kind of like forever. And so I really was hoping that I'd be able to catch it at some point. And then, yeah, about halfway through the first day.
Do you not have a DVR?
We don't, because we're cord cutters. We haven't had cable or satellite in like 5 years. God. So I know it's crazy, but I've never, ever missed it.
Y'all are so rebellious.
No, we're millennials. That's what it is. We our satellite was $150 and we were broke. So we learned how to cut corners.
I know, but it's PBS. Can't you put an antenna to your TV and get PBS?
Well, yeah, but I can't record it. So I did.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
And literally, so my kids are 7, my oldest kids. And I think that we cut the cord about their first year. So it's been 6 years. I have never missed it until last night. I was like, oh, DVR would be so great right now. Like you said, pretty much halfway through the first night, or maybe even the beginning of the first night, you could go on the history or the on the PBS website, and I guess Amazon, as you said. I haven't seen it there, but that's awesome. That'd be even better. Definitely worth checking out. So you saw the first half. What'd you think?
I thought it was really good. I thought it was an interesting look. And me and you talked about this a little bit before the show. They certainly didn't shy away from some of the, I don't want to say dark, because I don't think anything he did was dark.
That might be a good word for it, though.
To be honest with you, I think he was more disconnected than dark.
Yeah.
And if you watch it, you'll kind of get that he didn't understand what was going on. The company grew so big and he wasn't used to that. And he didn't know really. It had so many employees. He wasn't connected to what was going on below him. So they definitely didn't shy away from that. And, you know, I think what I told you before the show, they may have overcompensated that for that a little bit, just because everything else you ever see about him is only the positive.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Well, I had heard a little bit at D23 Expo and then an interview with the director. And I know that this was not like the first time they had asked to do something like this. It was obviously a natural fit for this series that goes into depth about presidents and other, and honestly, like there's one coming up about tuberculosis or something. So they go over all different things, but they've covered lots of past presidents, and the director and the producer were saying that's probably what gave them kind of the chops for Disney to go ahead and agree to this, because they had like unprecedented access to both the family and the archives, and Disney agreed to absolutely no creative input whatsoever. So nobody saw it. Nobody, you know, filtered it, which is pretty impressive. But I think they said, you know, they'd seen how they'd handled the good and the bad, the ups and downs of these past presidents, because they all have, you know, multiple sides of stories, and they just trusted that it was done well. And I think that I do think they did a really nice job. I wonder if they focused a little more on the dark, dark might be a good word, because there were talks about, you know, things about depression and how tough a boss he was, which is kind of what you were saying, about sexism, which was actually really appropriate for the time. So it's not like Walt was this, you know, person horrible to women, but women got paid less and women, you know, got different perks of a job. And so, and that was just very typical of the time, but they talked about all that. Yeah, they talked about the chain smoking. They talked about all this negative stuff. I wonder if it was a lot, or if it was like so different
on than par and just right.
So
just
different than what we're used to seeing. Yeah.
Obviously he didn't have bad thoughts about women in right. the workplace, or I mean, he married someone from the ink and paint department, so yeah. You know, so I mean, obviously that's not what in the case, but you're right, it was more just the time,
right?
But what was interesting was also to me was Neil Gabler played such a big role in it, which he's got that big Walt Disney biography, the really thick one, and actually have it on my coffee table, but he played a big role in just kind of talking about Walt. And then I can't remember the other guy's name. I Googled him. He's a Washington Times reporter, and his son has autism.
Okay.
And he wrote a big article, and maybe there's even a series about how they taught his son all kind of different things by speaking to him almost like in Disney terms.
Oh, that's really cool. I bet there's a lot of people now really cool. that would love that. There's such a... Yeah. community around how Disney does special needs and all kinds of things like that. So there's probably a lot of people that would love that.
Yep. I thought it was pretty interesting.
But yeah, I mean, it definitely showed both sides. So I feel like it was almost bookended by like the positive stuff. It talked about how whether you loved, hated him, didn't really know much of the details. There was no doubt that he changed, you know, everyone's world to some extent, whether it's just the movies that you've seen or the places you've gone or just really so many different things. He had a hand in so many things that we don't think about. But yet, one of the things that I found so fascinating was that he apparently even would say to people that he was not this, you know, Uncle Walt Disney that we all know and love. And from the TV specials, he even at one point was saying, you know, Walt Disney wouldn't do this, but I do this. Walt Disney wouldn't smoke. Walt Disney wouldn't. And so he even kind of knew this, disconnect between his like public persona and the person he was off screen.
I don't even know if it was his public persona, or they even kind of mentioned that was the ideological. That's who he wanted to be.
Right.
And you know what? I mean, I think we're all kind of like that.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know what? I have this perception of who I have this person that I really want to be. Am I always that person? No,
right.
Because bad things happen. You know what I'm saying? And we make stupid choices, and sometimes we do stupid things. We're human. But if I had just my way and I could say, bam, this is who you are. You know, I mean, I think we all have that in your head. I mean, I think we all strive to be better and be a better person and be more successful and do for, you know, those around us. But
For better or worse, we tend to only show those positive things. You know, there's this whole idea of only showing like the highlights of your life online or whatever. So, I mean, it's not like he was the only person to ever not publicly broadcast all the things that he may have been struggling with or feeling.
Sure.
So, yeah. So it was really interesting but you don't hear that stuff. You don't hear that stuff in most of these Walt biographies. You know, some of them even will shy away from the fact that he smoked, even though clearly he almost certainly died young because of his smoking. And so we all know that, but there's still some things that sort of like keep that on the back burner. And this just definitely didn't. I felt like it was mostly chronological, but then, so for people who didn't watch it, it was mostly chronological, but they talked very little about his childhood, which I don't know. I guess I expected, and this may be because of our appreciation for and enjoyment of As Dreamers Do, the Logan Sekulow movie that we actually have mentioned a couple different times lately, but that talks so much about Walt's super early years. And all of that was very formative, and it kind of glossed over his difficult relationship with his father and how hard he was worked. But it mentioned it a little bit. So if you're a fan of Walt Disney history, you'll catch right up as soon as it starts. But it did kind of skip that, and it went through, gosh, it did everything so well, I thought, as far as the difficulty that the studios had, and the, you know, we have this relationship with his brother Roy, who's always seen as like this super supportive, and they always had this just amazing relationship. Even if he wasn't sure what Walt was doing was going to work, he believed in him. But they mentioned there's this period of time where they didn't speak for months. And so they covered a lot of that I guess we just didn't know. And the clips, oh my goodness, the clips and the pictures.
And the pictures, yeah.
There were so many that I've never seen. And you and I and so many people listening have probably seen a lot of black and white clips of young Walt and of Disneyland and of the Wonderful World of Color and the conversations about the Florida Project. But what was really cool, even cooler, I think, was there were all these home videos and home audio where he was recording his parents on their anniversary, you know, like he was a radio broadcaster or something. All of this home footage was so, so neat. And I don't think I've ever seen anything like that.
And, you know, if I'm not mistaken, all that stuff is, I think they showed during the documentary that if you wanted to, you could go to PBS's website.
Okay.
And all that stuff was there. And I think it even said for more pictures, go to pbs.com. There was probably, you know, a subdirectory or a slash or something. But I'm sure you could find it if you went and searched on PBS. So,
well, and that was cool. I love the home stuff. And then also just the way, I don't know if it was because it was chronological or what. I was just maybe more immersed in it than I am in something that's a little shorter. I thought one of the most poignant parts to me was when they were talking about the initial audience to see Snow White. And, you know, we know that it was like the first full-length animated feature, and they were a little worried about it, and nobody really wanted to back it. And it was thought to, it was going to be a failure, and then it ended up great. And we know where it premiered, and we know all these like details around it. But to hear them kind of just spell out Walt being kind of uncertain himself, he believed in it, but he wasn't sure how it would be received, and how when the audience was like audibly crying at Snow White's apparent death, he knew that he had done it right. And I thought that is so crazy, because all of us, you know, I watch my kids who like kind of watch movies, or at least meet them at, you know, they meet characters at Disney World, or you just sort of grow up knowing that Snow White's not really dead. Prince kisses her, spoiler alert, the prince kisses her, she gets back up, everyone's happily ever after. But this audience had never seen anything like that. And so they followed this girl and they fell in love with her and believed she had died, and they're sobbing. And I thought that was crazy.
Yep.
Just to think about that. So
I agree.
That was very cool. The other thing that struck me a little odd, not odd, that I was surprised and somewhat impressed how deeply they went into, was the whole Red Scare, Cold War, anti-communist time frame. Was that in the first half or the second? Did you see that?
I think that had to be in the second half, because I don't remember.
Okay. Oh, I think we were talking about, yeah, I think you said it ended kind of right before that, but.
Well, it ended right at the first half ended like right at the strike. So that was after that, when the war, when the government kind of came to go over the studio. And I mean, I've read about that before, but I think I didn't see that.
Yeah. So there's this, you know, there's a strike and all kinds of backlash against the Disney studios and against Walt Disney. And then after that, sometime after that, came the Cold War, and you know, everyone kind of ratting out people they thought were communists. And there was this idea. And I mean, I don't know. I am led to believe that this documentary was pretty even handed. As we said, it kind of showed both sides, but it really painted Walt as this like vengeful, everyone who was, you know, who picketed against the studios is now like on this list I'm going to give people. I mean, it wasn't quite that direct, but he definitely seemed to like take it very personally. And then that spilled over into who he kind of said was involved in communism and who he kept on board and who he didn't. And so that's kind of a side that we don't really want to think about, you know, like that almost sounds like somebody who's just not that nice, period. So,
well, and you know, I mean, I think that kind of points to my point earlier, that I think he was more disconnected.
Yeah.
Than he was. He just didn't understand it. He didn't, because he thought it was like a slap in the face that they would strike, but he didn't, because he was so disconnected that he thought they would be loyal to him.
Yeah. Well, and then again, like, conflict resolution, you know, maybe we hear how tough a boss he was, how everyone was kind of afraid of him. Richard Sherman famously, I think, says, well, famously to Disney nerds, maybe, says that, like, right before he died, he gave them their first and only compliment that he ever said. He looked at some of them and said, keep up the good work. And that was the only time he had ever complimented them. So as brilliant as he was, like, I just don't know that he would have won, like, boss of the year. I think he was really not a great boss, you know, and that might be an understatement. But one thing that I thought was, they talked about Song of the South a little bit and, you know, a little bit differently, more like real-time reactions, which I thought was interesting because being, you know, the age we are now, in the time period we are now, we hear arguments for bringing it back and from both sides, from people who would have been affected by slavery and the way that African-Americans were treated, and from, you know, people who wouldn't, people who presumably are pretty disconnected. And we heard kind of real-time reactions to that, and they were almost as mixed, which I thought was kind of just something to note. But one thing that was, like, missing was this idea that he was, like, anti-Semitic. And when someone asked the director about that, they said, you know, there's no evidence of that. Like, we've said that about other presidents before. Like, we don't shy away from that, but we researched because that's such a popular claim. And there's just no indication that he had problems with the Jewish community. The only thing they came up with was, and this is something that I don't know from a history standpoint, but that there was some very poor association, especially in, you know, Hollywood and in other places like that, that there was kind of this association between the Jewish community and communists. So that's seems like a big stretch to me now in 2015, but that was kind of the only thing they came up with that was like what people might have taken as anti-Semitic, that he had this, you know, list of people that he turned in as possible communists, and that might be why he all of a sudden hated the Jews, apparently. But yeah,
I've heard that before, though, that he was definitely not.
Well, somebody said it at the Oscars recently. Like, someone called him all kinds of names, and then there was an article afterwards that was like, seriously, he wasn't, you know. So that was it was just interesting. I imagine that people who watched, some people thought that they just sort of overlooked that, but it wasn't that they completely ignored it. They, you know, kind of tried to put it in if it was going to be accurate, but
it was relevant, right?
Right.
Yeah, it was accurate.
But, you know, so we're saying like all these negative things, but ultimately they also talked so much about how much of a visionary he was and how, I mean, we know this, but how incredibly brilliant he was and how he could, they kind of ended it by talking about how he could just see into the human psyche. He could do things that he knew would make people feel, even if it was, you know, animation that people thought wouldn't really connect with anybody. He could really just speak to how people were feeling and how people reacted to things. And he just knew how to do that, which is pretty impressive. They talked about how all he wanted for his family was to give his children like the childhood he never had. So they certainly covered a lot of these, you know, more fond memories that all of us
have. Oh, I mean, he drove his kids to school. He made sure, even though, you know, his wife didn't work, he made sure that he drove his kids to school every morning.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I was actually waiting for the Griffith Park carousel because that's one of my favorite stories, with the whole watching his daughters play. And then it wasn't really there, but unless I just blinked and missed it or something. But, and then also from a production standpoint, like we said, the footage and the pictures were wonderful. They had a ton of really great interviews, or like not interviews, but kind of the little interjections from people talking. So some people that were like really famous, like Richard Sherman, and then not famous people. You mentioned the journalists, there were a couple of those, but there were like people from the ink and paint department and some people that, you know, we certainly didn't know their names, but they just got in touch with all these people and had all of their input. And the one part, I mean, I think you're going to still watch it, but gosh, it was really, the one part that was really touching was, not really in a great way, was watching the people tell their sort of, I remember when I heard Walt died stories, because I had heard this before, that everything was very, you know, kind of kept behind closed doors as far as how sick he really was. And the people that worked for him didn't know. And there was this woman from the ink and paint department that was getting her hair cut at like the company barbershop. And one of the person who was doing her hair was like, oh, that's a shame about Walt. And she said, oh, he'll be okay. And the hairdresser was like, no, he died. And everyone was just so surprised and caught off guard. And it sort of took a while to trickle through the organization, which I thought was really interesting. So you hear, you know, we do this with tragedies anyway, like talk about where were you when you heard this or when you saw that. And you could see these people really connecting with that moment for them, which I thought was really kind of neat. But
yeah, I mean, it happened way before I was born, and it still kind of makes me sad.
I know, right?
You know, it's like,
well, yeah. And in reality, like, you wouldn't, I mean, he wouldn't have been alive anyway, but like, right. But still, yeah, it just
hearing,
seems.
Just hearing other people's reactions to it, it's like, oh my God, terrible.
And I thought that was so interesting. Like, one of the things that it left me with is, as human as he was, and as difficult a boss he may have been, and how people may not have necessarily understood or related to him, they all knew that he was something special. Like, they all really still valued working for him and what he was providing to the world, which, I mean, honestly, obviously, Richard Sherman and people who are still living have seen what it's grown into. But I don't think even then that most of them could have had any idea how big the Disney company would be, how big Walt Disney's name would be, and, you know, all the cool things that would come from it. So I thought it was really neat. It went by quickly for 4 hours, I thought.
It was definitely interesting when they started it, you know, and they basically said, you know, if you're an American, basically you've been touched by Walt. There's no way you right. could have not be touched by Walt Disney in some type of way.
Right.
Whether it be a movie or merchandise or Mickey Mouse or, you know, Disney Channel.
And that's how it kind of ended it too, was just this idea that he had left this huge lasting impact on these people that knew him personally and then on the rest of the world, which was pretty cool.
And so. You know, it's interesting because we talked about, you know, he definitely wasn't necessarily a great boss, and he was very tough. But those same people that would talk about how tough he was and not necessarily the greatest boss of the time would probably tell you now that they're so glad that they worked for him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know,
well, to be a part of that. Yeah. It's
just to
amazing.
Be a part of the whole thing. And you know what he demanded? He demanded of other people what he expected from himself.
Yeah, that's good.
If you're a boss, sometimes that's not always reasonable. You know what I mean?
Well, because
you can't really put that on other people.
Not all bosses are, but some people are in positions of authority because they are top notch. They are so dedicated to their craft. And then, yeah, you can't expect every person to be like that.
To be you, right.
But you run a good organization if you encourage them to be their best and to be the best that they can be.
I agree.
So have you seen, I've actually been just absent from most of the world today, but have you seen reactions to it? How do you think people, I wondered as I was watching if there would be people that were like, this is so negative and so awful and I can't believe they did this to Walt. Like, or if people kind of were
I haven't seen a lot of
swayed.
At all,
I know. I know. I haven't either.
I can tell you how social media works. I think if the reaction was negative, you would definitely hear about it.
That's true. Yeah.
So I think maybe it's just kind of maybe just in the middle. Maybe people are just kind of
like we are just like, wow. That's,
like we are. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Just,
we enjoyed it. But, it, you know, there were some things in there that are a little tough to stomach if you're a fan.
Yeah. Yeah. I was kind of following the hashtag, which is Walt Disney PBS during it. And that was kind of the same reactions I was seeing. People were simultaneously talking about what amazing things he accomplished and like, wow, but you know, it wasn't all like sunshine and rainbows all the time. Like he wasn't always smiling, right?
You'd have to be a little bit naive to think that it would be.
Absolutely.
It is a business. I just saw somebody post the other day in the Disney Nerds group about them. Did you see they're doing like a sequel or whatever to Mary Poppins?
I saw a headline, but I kind of didn't read it. No.
So, well, somebody posted in the group that they're remaking Mary Poppins, which really threw people.
Well, that's what I think I saw.
Handle.
Yeah.
But they're not remaking. They're making another Mary Poppins movie.
Okay.
But it's going to be a sequel.
So like, okay.
So it's going to be kind of what happened after. But people are still flipping out about it. It's like, oh my God, I can't believe
they're doing this
to this classic. P.L. Travers is probably rolling over in our grave. I'm like, first of all, if she wouldn't have been broke, she wouldn't have let Walt make the first movie.
Right, right.
So somebody else redoing it, I don't think she'd probably would care. Second of all, I don't understand where this thing comes from, where people think like these movies are like just
sacred and yeah. Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, there's not, it's, he's not, they're not redoing the Bible.
Right. You and know? They're not like putting the original Mary Poppins in the vault, never to be seen again.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and the other thing is, I'm like, well, if you're a fan of Disney, first of all, that's what Walt Disney did. He took a bunch of right. old tales and yeah. twisted them to fit his end result.
Well, that's absolutely true. Like, I mean, there are, I think that,
I mean, in the documentary, and what brought me up to brought me to this is in the documentary, they talk about Pinocchio and how the original story of Pinocchio is way, well, most of the stuff was darker
than. Oh my gosh. Than, yeah.
Or, yeah. So, but even, I mean, they really went into Pinocchio and how it was way, you know, the original, the way it was written was so much different than what Walt did. So you can't, I don't understand how you, on one hand, you can say, don't you touch Mary Poppins. But then it's you love all these Disney movies, which he did the exact same thing. Right. That's what he did.
But I think that there is a large portion of the world, and maybe it's actual lack of knowledge, or maybe it's sort of just not wanting to care. And I'm kind of the latter. Like, I love the Walt Disney versions of movies. When we were at the expo, they were talking about Jack and the Beanstalk and how there's no definitive version of Jack and the Beanstalk. So that's what Disney's going to make, is gigantic. And they want it to be the definitive version. I love thinking that these are the only versions. I know it's not true, but I do love it. And so, but there's this, like, I mean, yeah, like you said, most of like the Hans Christian Andersen and Grimm fairy tales, oh my gosh, most of them are like awfully dark. Like, I would never read them to my children, which is why they're not the version that he did. But yeah, I'm with you.
And I, you know, I'm not interested enough. I'm like you. I am a Disney fan, and I'm like, you know what? I'm not interested enough. And I like the Disney version. I'm not interested enough really to go seek out these original tales.
Right.
Because it really doesn't matter to me. But I just, it kind of gets under my skin a little bit when people are like, oh my God, don't you touch that classic Disney movie. And I'm like, well, first of all, he didn't write the story.
Right. Well, that's a really good point, though, because you hear the same thing. You hear the back and forth about how, you know, Walt would never want sponsors in the park when he was like the first person to do that well. He was. Yes.
In the park.
He did.
That's what he
did. He even brought, I mean, a lot of, Kyle and I were talking, a lot of the original shops that were in Disneyland were completely independent of Disney property, Disney corporation.
He couldn't even build Disneyland without the help of ABC, which Disney didn't own at that time, but they, you know, ABC and all these other sponsors came and invested money. So it, without sponsors, it wouldn't have been built. And you know, what's interesting, we went completely off topic. What's interesting is since they put Starbucks in, now there's even stands that are Joffrey's.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So there's all this different, you know.
Yeah.
Capitalism at its finest, right?
Like, yeah, well, I mean, you know, I think it's awesome. I don't knock it at all. I mean, most of the good stuff wouldn't exist without these corporate sponsors.
I think, though, we're not too far off topic, because I actually think that's why these documentaries, I mean, let's be honest, a lot of people who like Disney, and there's nothing wrong with this, we probably are. Some people would argue we spend too much time reading or watching, you know, history things, but a lot of people probably have very little idea who Walt Disney was and what he did. And that's perfectly fine. But I think that these documentaries are really good for the fan who kind of wants to dig in a little bit more and has these opinions about the park and has opinions about the movie, but doesn't really have much of a foundation, because we just see that all these, you know, ideas we have about Walt and about what he would have liked for, you know, we saw what he wanted for Epcot, but who's to say that that wouldn't have changed or whatever. So all these things that we think he wanted, like, who are we to say that we have any idea really what Walt Disney was thinking? Given these documentaries, we see that there's so much more to his life than like, I'm going to make this most, you know, magical, happiest place on earth, and everyone's going to live happily
ever
after.
Than just being Mickey Mouse.
Right.
Walt was so much more than just the voice of Mickey Mouse. You know?
Yeah. And so for us to think that we can accurately decide what would have him rolling over in his grave is kind of funny to me, which is kind of where we got on that.
Anyway, well, I can tell you corporate sponsors would not be it, because he was all for that.
I know, right?
And you know what? The way he was, if he were alive today, he probably wouldn't even be making movies. He had already moved on pretty much from animated movies. Like he did, his mantra was keep moving forward. So he would master one thing and then kind of push that to the side. And it wasn't that they didn't do it anymore, but he didn't do it anymore.
Right.
He would let his team and he would move on to something else.
Well, and I love that quote. And we hear, I think I've mentioned that I have it like on my wall where we're recording, but I think that I even find myself using this idea, keep moving forward, as a stick with it kind of like keep moving forward. You're going to keep going. But in reality, the rest of it talks about opening up new doors, doing new things because we're curious and curiosity keeps leading us down new paths. So that whole quote that we often come back to, or at least, you know, Meet the Robinsons, you and I both agree, is one of the most underrated movies of all time. Yep. I think that was you, right?
Absolutely.
It even has that same kind of mantra, but it's this idea, not that you just stick with something, although I think he probably did that well, but that you explore new things. Like that's a big, big part of who he was. So sure. I love that.
When he was decided that he was going to build Disneyland and then move on after that to the Florida project, he wasn't that involved in the movies anymore. He had moved. He was done with that.
Yeah.
There was still a team of people doing it, but he was done with it. He was moving on to other things, and his energy was focused on Wed Enterprises, and
They talked early on about how he recognized, he drew Mickey and Mortimer and Oswald, and then he realized, like, I'm not the best animator. Like, I'm not the best animator. So I'm going to hire somebody who is good at that, and I'm going to move on to something else. So, like you said, I think he recognized the things that he was good at and the things that he wasn't good at, and just really kept on doing the whole dreaming and innovating thing. Not so much or who knows, maybe if he had lived longer, that would have been how it went, that he would have done the dreaming and innovating and not so much the company running. We can't know because, as we saw, there's just so much more to it than we know.
So this has been, this has been a great discussion about the,
it was good. I'd love to hear on the Disney Nerds group or the page or everywhere what people thought. Because I watched it and I kind of wondered if people would be put off by it. But the reaction, like you said, the little reaction I saw was pretty positive. Yeah. So I'm curious. I'm really curious what like Bob Iger thought of it. Because I mean, he's not going to say, I don't think. But like these heads at Disney now probably have their own ideas of how the company is and should be and how he is and was. And like I said, they didn't see this ahead of time. So it'd be so funny to like be a fly on the wall watching current executives watch it. So awesome. Well, we might talk one more time before you're in Disney World, but maybe not. So hopefully we'll just see a ton of people down at the parks in a couple weeks.
I agree.
Awesome.
I'm excited. All right, guys, that's going to wrap it up for this week. This was a great conversation. One, I don't know that, I think we've covered pieces of it in different shows, but I don't know if we've ever had just kind of a whole show on Walt Disney himself. So it's been a lot of fun. If you're looking to get in touch with us, you can email us at jimmy@thedisneynerds.com, jen@thedisneynerds.com, sam@thedisneynerds.com, and ed@thedisneynerds.com. If you have a question or a comment just in general for the whole show, email it to questions@thedisneynerds.com. And make sure you go and join Disney Nerds group on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter @thedisneynerds, Instagram @thedisneynerdspodcast, and make sure you give us a like on Facebook at the Disney Nerds Podcast page.
Awesome. I'm interested to see what Sam and Ed have to say about the special as well, but
it'd be interesting. Sam hasn't seen it yet, so he's been on the road, so he's not going to listen until he's not even going to listen to the show until he sees it.
We'll just have to talk about it next month.
All right, for this week, this is Jimmy for Jen. We're signing off. See you later. Quaharini.
See ya. If
you would like to join our jamboree, there's a simple rule that's compulsory. Mortals pay a token fee. Rest in peace, the haunting's free. So hurry back.